The children of God will not depart from his hand. And we saw that marvelously displayed in our lesson this morning. We'll continue to see that today as we talk about further effective ministry and what that looks like. Can we have effective ministry in our churches today? Well, the resounding answer to that is yes, certainly. And we see the way forward here in 1 Thessalonians, a book, again, that we don't normally probably turn to find out how the church should operate, but we should. And even as I've meditated on the truths this week from 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, I've decided to just take a little more time to reflect and focus on these truths a little more carefully. So we're going to continue this theme on into next week as well, as I've expanded my outline a little bit and add some more stories, some more illustrations as well that I think will be helpful. We started reading in chapter 2, and we'll read to where we stopped last week in verse 6. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1. For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. For though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict. Rather than shrink away from further ministry, Paul did what many of us would not do. Paul went through some much more difficult circumstances than probably we'll ever go through. I don't know that any of us are going to start a riot with our preaching of the gospel. We kind of hope that we don't. I don't know that any of us are going to be thrown in jail, although that could be a possibility in our future if this country continues in the way that it is. We could face jail time, but I don't think anybody has here yet that I'm aware of. And yet, Paul said, rather than shrink away after those difficulties, he was emboldened to continue ministry, gospel ministry. Folks, that's just a reminder to us, don't give up. No matter the hardships you face, don't give up. Paul says, imitate him. And I ask you as a pastor, please imitate Paul in this. We're thankful for the ministry servants that we have, and we need even more. So Paul says, even in the midst of much conflict, we declared to you we were faithful. Verse 3, for our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive. They were not in error in their gospel message. They included no immoral communication or suggestions in their presentation. And they did not desire to deceive anyone. They wanted to be sincere and be who they were. Men that were being worked on by the power of God in their own lives. But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. That is the theme of this whole passage, really, is that their ministry was God approved. And everything that we see that Paul describes today, as he describes in detail his ministry with these people, was pleasing to God. That is the sweet spot, folks. That is where we ought to desire to land first. Not, do I like this? Or do people like this kind of ministry? But is this pleasing to God? Is God approving of this ministry? And Paul says that as they conducted gospel ministry in the city of Thessalonica, it was approved. It pleased God. And then he continues to describe why. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is witness. They weren't trying to butter people up. They weren't trying to make them feel good. But they were trying to be sincere with the gospel presentation. They weren't in it for the money. And God himself was witness to that fact. Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. Folks, I think it's so important for leadership, as I mentioned last week, that leadership, pastors on down, are not guilty of flattery or saying sweet things just to make people feel good or certainly not to be in ministry for the financial gain. It's hard to imagine, but some people are. Or not seeking their own glory. And that's one that's many times easy. It's an easy temptation for leaders, is that they get up in front of people and they have this public ministry, and after a while, whether they realize it or not, they start to desire that glory for themselves. And folks, as your pastor, I pray that that would never be, and that God would convict me if I start down that road. And Paul says, we had no desire to get glory from people or to make an impression or to market ourselves in the right way. Paul never referred to a particular church as his church. Sometimes I get a little nervous about that too. I do it many times as well, thinking of friends and the pastor and the churches they minister. Oh, that's so-and-so's church. And some people may say, oh, this is Pastor Brock's church. No, it's not. This is the church of Jesus Christ. He owns the church. We don't want any of the glory to ourselves. So Paul has described what he did not do as he came to these people. And now he's going to describe further, and we're going to see that, as we just had read in just a minute. But what does God-approved ministry look like? Well, Paul says it doesn't include some things. It doesn't include greed or self-marketing or self-aggrandizement or deceit. But it does include a love for people. I remember meeting a man in ministry one time. He was a special speaker at a conference that I was at. And he made the statement to us. And I appreciate his being candid about this. But still, it made an impact on me. He said, I enjoy in my ministry preaching and teaching to people. He said, that I enjoy. But he said, you know, getting together one-on-one with people, he said, going out for coffee with them and talking with them, spending time with them, that's not really my thing. I thought, it kind of sounds like you don't really enjoy being with people. Well, that's a problem for a pastor, wouldn't you say? I'm sure you've seen these bumper stickers before. I haven't seen any of them on your vehicle, so I'm not pointing anybody out. But something along the lines of, I love my dog, or I love my particular breed better than people. Now, we can understand that, right? Because we get frustrated with people. But, folks, is that really biblical? Should you really love your pet more than people? I can tell you this, as a pastor, I better never be a bumper sticker on my vehicle. I love my pets better than I love people. I don't think you'd want me to be a pastor here for very long. The point is Paul makes clear in the passage today, and we're just really going to be looking at two or three verses, that it included a love for people. And that is so important. We must have a burden, and not just for saved people, although maybe sometimes in the church it's harder to love some of the members in the church. But folks, we need to have a love for those outside of the church. My own personal testimony, I don't think that I've ever taken time to share it, and I'm going to share it this morning as we again look a second time on God-approved effective ministry and the fact that all effective ministry must be done pleasing to God. I don't think I've ever shared a full testimony on how the Lord led me to full-time vocational ministry, because we're all involved in full-time ministry, right? We should be. But full-time vocational ministry, it's very vivid, and God used some very interesting circumstances, but it all revolves around this idea of love for people. Some of you know that I didn't even go undergrad. I went to a Christian college, but I didn't go for a seminary. I didn't study for a seminary degree. But my undergrad was actually commercial art. and painting and designing and all those sorts of things. In high school, I seemed to have some sort of desire and ability for art. And so it just made sense. I didn't know what else I wanted to do. So I knew my parents wanted me to go to a Christian college, and we kind of had the one picked out because it was the one that we could afford down Pensacola, Florida. And I started an art degree, found out it was a lot of work, a lot more work than I was expecting. And those teachers were very demanding in what they expected in a lot of ways, but it was good. But I graduated with an art degree. My family lived in Miami, Florida, South Florida at that point. So I started looking in Central Florida for a job. I didn't want to stay in Southern Florida, didn't really like the weather too much, kind of wanted to get out on my own. So I had a friend in Central Florida. He sent me some possibilities from the newspapers. I sent resumes. Ended up in Winter Garden, Florida, which is not too far from Orlando, Florida, and only 20 minutes directly north of Walt Disney World. Wow. Who wouldn't want to work there? My resume was accepted. Ended up having an interview, and the Lord just worked it out. This was actually a NASDAQ-traded company. It was a big corporation that was just starting up, and they wanted me to head their graphics design division. Well, it was probably a little early for me to do that. I was a little wet behind the ears, and I began to find pretty quickly that I was way in over my head. But at the same time, I knew that as the Lord had provided this opportunity, actually found out later that the secretary there at the place where I worked was a Christian, and she saw that I was a Christian and put my resume on the top of the pile so that her boss would see it first. And they brought me in. That job actually only lasted about 5 months. The Lord knew that I wasn't cut out for a corporate job. In a lot of ways, it was sold to another company. As I was getting ready or just kind of installed into that new position, I was also looking for a church to attend. And of course, being single, young single in Central Florida, I wanted to find a big church that had a really nice singles group and get to know a lot of people. So my parents had told me of one, and I was driving my car one day. I had plenty of time. I made sure I was early to get to this church. Excited about maybe meeting some young people my own age and things. I still was getting acclimated. And wouldn't you know, as I got onto the ramp, you know how this happens, instead of taking the slight turn, the first turn to the right, I took the second turn to the right. And would you know that that took me in the exact opposite direction of where I wanted to go? And it took me, actually, I ended up circling right back into the small little town of Winter Garden, Florida, right where I'd been from the beginning, and I wasn't real happy about that. In fact, I was pretty upset, and I was frustrated, and I was so irritated that I wasn't paying close enough attention to what the stoplight was doing in front of me. And to this day, I think that I probably had, getting past it before it turned red, but as I started going under that yellow light, I saw that it turned red, and I thought, uh-oh, and I looked behind me, and there was a police car right behind me, and that made me really nervous. So I thought, you know, I don't think the Lord wants me to go to that big church today. I think there's a church I've heard here in town, right down the road here. I think now's a good time to go to that church instead. I quickly went down a side road and down another side road. Now, honestly, folks, if I really had ran that red light, I think that policeman would have pulled me over. But I was nervous and anxious, pulled into that small church ministry, and said, I'll try this out. Tried it out. Went to the singles group. They were nice people, but I just really wasn't clicking with anybody. Got to the main service and really just thought, well, I've tried this once, but I don't think I'm going to come back. After the service, a young lady I noticed across the way that I knew as I looked at her, and she saw me, and she said, Brock, what are you doing here? Well, it was a young lady that I went to college with, and she recognized me. I said, what are you doing here, Tammy? And she said, oh, I'm the assistant, I'm the youth pastor's wife, and let me introduce you to my husband. And she did. And that man, in about 5 minutes' time, gave me the best sales presentation for helping out a small church that still to this day I've ever heard. And he said, I know we don't look like much, but we've got this, and I'd like you to help you with the teens. And, oh, you're in art. Well, we can have you do this and design this. And so I decided, you know what? I'll stick around for a couple more weeks. Stuck around for a couple more weeks. Ended up being months. And I stayed at that church. And beyond just helping with some design projects, I eventually ended up getting another job that was more fitting for where I was at, where I could learn things graphic design-wise. And that second job also gave me the opportunity to help out in my church more. Calvary Baptist Church, Winter Garden, Florida. You know, the more I began helping out at that church and eventually helping with the teens, the more God drew my heart and love to the people there. I just wanted to be around them. They were encouraging to me. They were, they exhorted me in many ways. I loved working with young people. I found out that I had a love for working. That was actually the first ministry where I found out, you know, I really do enjoy working with teens. And that's helped me out quite a few times throughout my life in ministry. I was actually to the point where I was going to work every day at a really good job, but I was actually more interested in helping out at the church than I was at that job that I had. It was a great job, graphics design job. I remember a friend of mine was the buildings and grounds director, and he needed more help cleaning the facilities so that he could spend more time with his family. And I knew this. And I finally said, you know, why don't I help you? Why don't I just help you? Because I'm single, I can help you with some of this, and you can get home to your family more quickly and spend more time with them. It just makes sense. So we started doing this, and I knew this was of God when I started getting more excited about helping this friend clean bathrooms than I was about going to my normal, my central job every day. I said, Lord, you're doing something here. Finally, the Lord made it clear as that church also asked me to teach in their Christian school and to be the youth pastor, the other pastor that God had used in my life. The assistant pastor had left, gone on to another ministry. God began to use these things as a youth director and as a high school Christian school teacher to show me that he had burdened me with a love for people that I couldn't shake. I loved these people that I was ministering to. They had gotten into my heart. And I knew, Lord, I don't know all that I'm going to face, but I know this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. God eventually called me to Bob Jones University and then met Leslie. And you know a lot of that story. Folks, God used, as he called me into full-time ministry, a love for people and a desire for them to help them to grow in their relationship with Christ. And that's what God uses for us as we're working in ministry and serving in ministry together. There ought to be a love and at least a concern for each other as we're serving together. Now, Paul takes this to the next level, as you would expect. In fact, as we see here in verse 7, Paul starts talking in terms that really, let's just be candid here, are kind of embarrassing. Did Paul really say that? Well, look at verse 7. He said, we didn't do all those other things, but what did we do? We were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. We saw last week that God-approved ministry is effective in its blamelessness. That yes, God does expect us to live lives that are pleasing to him. But God-approved ministry is also effective in its selflessness, and that we're willing to give up of ourselves for other people. Do you not see that in Paul's words here? And note, too, as we go back to verse 7, Paul is actually referring to folks that have not trusted the gospel yet. He has this love and desire for those who have not trusted Jesus Christ. Well, that's convicting, is it not? And yet, it's exactly the kind of love and concern that we need to have for others. Paul, notice at the end of verse 6 that Paul said he didn't wield the power of harsh, heavy-handed authority. He could have. But Paul said, I didn't want to come across as stern and angry to you all. But I wanted to come in a loving way, promoting grace and the love of Christ. Paul was gentle. So gentle, in fact, that there's actually a translation issue in the first part of that verse. I don't know if anybody has the NIV, but it says, we were like infants among you, which, if that is correct, means that we basically acted like, you know how when you're in a nursery full of babies, sometimes you'll talk baby talk and you can look really silly, or you'll talk kind of that way to small children. You'll talk back to them in the same way because you're trying to communicate and have a conversation with them. It looks really silly when you if you talk that way to another adult, but we sometimes do that with small children. That's basically what Paul may be saying here, is that we were careful as small children, we talk to you that way. I think probably the idea of being gentle is the center theme there. Paul was very careful in his ministry toward people as he told them about the gospel and as they came to Christ. This new fledgling ministry was almost like a nest that Paul was being very careful with and surrounding the people like a mother bird would take care of her own. Paul says, we were very careful. So careful and so affectionate that literally like a nourishing mother taking care of her own children. Folks, that's caring evangelism. That's caring discipleship. Let's just be candid here. That takes it to a whole other level that most of us don't even realize. Some of us have trouble even being kind to people in this auditorium, to smile or to show God's love. Paul says we need to be harder. Because remember, Paul has told us that this church imitated him. So we don't get the excuse of, well, of course, that's Paul. You know, of course Paul loved people. I mean, he's the apostle. He's supposed to in this way, but there's no way. No, Paul said this church was already imitating him in these very actions and these attitudes. Are we supposed to imitate Paul the apostle today? I think so. We have a long ways to go. How are we at just being gentle with people? Do we even notice when we have visitors? I'd love it if we had such a situation where if we had a visitor and we had a great group of people that just made a beeline toward them almost. Now, we don't want to freak people out, so be careful. But I'd much rather have that situation than the other that can sometimes go on in ministry where we barely notice that people are visiting at all. That was one of the good concerns that I had with our ministry in New Hampshire. We were a very small church, meeting in a rented facility, and we loved having visitors. So it was almost like you had this rush of people whenever there was a visitor that came afterwards to try to talk with them first, and then I would be as a pastor at the end of the line waiting, and I'd find out that our people had already found out all this information about them before I even got to them. Well, actually, folks, that's a really great thing. That's not a bad thing to have happen for a pastor, is that other people in the church have already gotten to that new person. They're gentle, they're caring, and they've found out things about them. Now, we don't want to scare them away. Don't get me wrong. Be careful in that. Be gentle in your approach to people. But are we gentle and caring at all with visitors? Are we gentle and caring with people in our community? Are you caring with people when you're at Walmart? And we all know this happens. And it doesn't matter the time of day. You get ready, you've got a cart full of things. You go to that final aisle and you're ready to check out. And they've got like, what, 10, 12? And only two are open. And the self-check, there's a line that goes all the way back and around the corner. And it's like, really? Or... And you get frustrated, and so instead of saying something kind and helpful and being a testimony of Christ, you complain, or you have a look like, I don't have time for this. How dare these people shop and be here right at this time when I need to shop and get out right away? This is so rude of them. We have a lot of times when we walk around the community and we're not really that gentle or caring. We need to be. This tender affection, and we've all seen this, of how a mother takes care of her newborn and takes special care and protection and tries to surround that baby with all that it needs and protecting it from hazards and all these things because it's helpless. We get that when it comes to babies. Babies are cute and soft. Grown-up people aren't so cute and soft. It's a little harder to have this picture, and yet Paul says, I was willing to do that and glad to do that. And again, folks, he's talking about people, some people that hadn't known Christ yet. He's talking about unbelievers. As they got to Thessalonica, Paul was careful, and the men around him were careful. They were very gentle. They weren't overbearing. As they were sharing Christ and they got some stupid questions, they didn't say, well, that was a stupid question. Why would you ask that? No, let's explain it further. Let's give you all the information that you need to understand the gospel. Folks, he cherished these people and he actually felt affection for them. These folks were dear to Paul. Are there people in your life that don't know Christ that are dear to you? Well, there should be. That's something that we have to work on, isn't it? I don't have time today. I'll tell this next week. Besides that story I told of Lee last week, our neighbor, had the opportunity to talk to another individual whose name was Mike. And the Lord led me as I got to know him, to know some of the struggles that he was going through. He shared them with me, and folks, God gave me a burden for that man who didn't know Christ, was unsaved, and I had a desire almost to the point of tears of wanting to share Christ with him. And I'm one that doesn't consider myself a very good evangelist, by the way. But we need to have that kind of desire and concern for other people. I just, this weekend, gave my boys a gift. We had some of those, you know, those really nice model cars that many of them are made from the mint. I forget the name of the mint right now, but it might be even one of the mints that's up here in Pennsylvania. But they're made mostly of metal, some of plastic, but they have all of the parts that the actual car has, and it's an exact replica of old classic cars and all kinds of different vehicles. My grandfather, my Grandpa Maudsley, collected a number of those, and he had them in showcase. He had them in little display cases, and every time we would come over, he would take one out, and he would show us, see, you turn the steering wheel, and it turns the wheels. Oh, that's so cool. And all the different things were painted, and then he would carefully put it back up in the display case and says, now, don't touch that without you asking first. Okay, Grandpa. Well, it was getting to the end of his life, and he started actually distributing these to his grandkids. And come to find out, he had made a list of all of those really nice minted replica cars and these different classic cars and things, and he specifically picked out different grandchildren that would get this car. And he would tell us, he would say, one day I'm going to give you this car and this one over here. Oh, that's great. That's exciting. He had a friend ask him one time. He said, this friend said, you know, if you give all those minted cars away, you're just going to give them away to your grandkids, and they're just going to collect dust, and they're not going to really value them. I will pay you for them. I'll give you what they're worth. And my grandfather responded in some way or another, no, I really want my children, my grandchildren, to have these. Well, what was he saying? Those cars were dear to him. But people, his grandkids, were more dear to him, and he wanted his own family to enjoy those things rather than someone who was outside of the family circle because people were more dear to him than things. Folks, we've got to ask the Lord to help us in that regard in all of our lives to make sure in our lives that we are allowing people to be more dear to us than things, than animals. Don't we have that switched around in our society today where everything is more important than humankind, and humankind is destroying the world, mankind is destroying the world and destroying the environment? And, you know, really, if we just had less of mankind and less of his footprint in the world, the earth could grow and things would be a lot happier, the animals would be a lot happier, the planet would be better off. But aren't you glad that God sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die for people? And because Jesus died for people and showed his love in that way, shouldn't we show more love for people than for these other things around us? Isn't it true? You really do sacrifice all for those you truly love. You can mark the things that you spend the most time on in your life are the things that you truly love. That is convicting to all of us, including me. What do you really love in life? Just look at what you spend the most time with. Who did Paul spend the most time with? Again, people. Look at verse 8. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share, first of all, the gospel. But that word for affectionately desirous is a very intense word in the Greek. It means great affection, heartfelt desire, or longing. Look at the end of that verse. Paul says, you had become very dear to us. That word for dear is, some of you might recognize this word, it is the word agape. It is the love of God. And what is Paul saying? Because we could read this and say, how can Paul have such care and concern for people that he had just met? I don't even comprehend that. It's because God's love was working through him, and because of that, he was able to show God's love to others. In other words, folks, it's a supernatural love that I can't even explain. Apart from when you're committed to sharing the gospel with others, God will give you that love as well. But you have to be committed and faithful to sharing with people around you. Paul says, not only the gospel of God, and again, that was the priority. Paul says, the gospel that has been given to us by God, this is God's word. There was no deceit. This was the truth of the sacrifice and resurrection of Jesus Christ and his atonement for sin and his forgiveness of sins, that through faith, through our dependence on what Jesus did, we can become children of God. That gospel that God had given him, he certainly shared, but he also said we shared our own selves. That meant that he took time with people. And really, he's describing here, he took time at a financial and physical cost. Look at verse 9. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. That word labor means a bearing. That means exertion. That means a type of work that one wears themselves out in doing. Toil is travail, hard work. I've met a lot of hardworking people in my life that have inspired me to make sure that I have a good work ethic. But don't we fail sometimes when it comes to that work ethic, when it comes to ministry? What a wonderful testimony, and one of the most wonderful testimonies that I can think of is somebody to say about someone, they work hard for the cause of Christ, and they work hard to show the love of Christ to other people. It's their life's work. They wear themselves out to show the love of Christ to others. That's powerful and convicting. I think Paul lost sleep over these ministry children that he had. And he didn't want to be a burden to them, but he wanted to be a blessing as they preached the most important message, the gospel. And he wanted to be a blessing. He wanted to be an example of the love of Christ in his words, but also in his actions and how he talked. He did not seek to gain as others did, but he sought to serve and to show love. And not only him, but his companions as well. Can I make a really practical application from this? I think this is obvious, but as Paul would want us to mimic his example, it sounds to me like Paul did a lot more than just go to the synagogue and preach one message one time a week and ask people to come and hear the gospel, and then he was done. It sounds to me like Paul did a whole lot more than that. It sounds to me like it was a daily thing, that he was looking around, and as he was working, he was a tent maker, right? Working with probably leather and different things. Each Jewish child had to have an occupation or a skill so that they could provide for themselves and their family throughout their lives. And Paul had that. He was a tent maker. And I imagine as he was making those tents, people were coming to him and interested in them. And he would weave in the gospel and talk about the gospel with them and use his opportunity to share Christ with them daily. I think he would work into the hours of the night to be able to talk with folks. Now, I'm not saying we have to imitate Paul in that way, folks, but I think we understand we fall far, far short most of the time from that example. In your work, around your neighborhood, do you even know who your neighbors are? Do you know beyond a name and a last name who your coworkers are? Do you know what their likes and dislikes are? Do you know what their favorite sports team is? Do you know what they like to eat? There are all kinds of ways that we can get to know people and get to know them in a closer way before we ever even share the gospel with them. But we need to be willing to expend ourselves and look at the world around us. Folks, this is how effective gospel ministry takes place. Not just invite them to the morning service so they can hear the gospel, but Lord, make me aware of the people around me and help me just to get to know them. Help me to befriend them, to learn how to be a better friend to these people so that at some point you might give me the opportunity to share the gospel with them. But to look for these opportunities, to Lord, just help me to care about those that have not trusted Christ and are facing eternity in hell. Help me to care about them. Help me to care and help me to share the message of the gospel at the right time as it's appropriate. Folks, effective ministry involves caring evangelism and also discipleship. Paul had this same attitude and relationship with those that came to Christ. He spent time with them. And we as the church need to spend time with each other to help each other grow. These are those relationships that I've been talking about that the Lord pressed upon my heart that I have with folks in our ministry already. Accountability relationships, meeting with people regularly to help keep them accountable, to disciple them. It shows my care and concern for them. And we as a church body need to have care and concern for each other to be willing to get together with those that God would lead us to, not just anybody, but if there's someone in the church that God has led you to that's a friend that you can share things with, you ought to be able to get together and disciple each other and encourage each other. The body of Christ ought to be very dear to us. And maybe if we started down this path, eventually we might even be able to understand a little bit more what Paul says when he says, I'm affectionately desirous. It's like, oh, don't like that word. But the more we head down this path, folks, I guarantee we'll understand more of that love that comes from Christ that we can share to others. Are we willing to do this type of effective ministry, to practice this? It's God-pleasing, it's God-approved, but it takes time. It takes compassion. God help us to want and desire that kind of ministry in this church and in this community. Father, Thank you for the reminder that Paul has told us today and the convicting reminder of how much he cared for others. Lord, we barely care for people many times as even a passing acquaintance, and certainly not as a caring mother who would do whatever she needs for her child, for her infant. Lord, show us the way. Give us a compassion and a concern for the people in this church to help to see them to grow and to want to spend time with them to do so. And certainly give us a concern for a world that's lost and dying, going to hell around us in this county. And help us to be willing to have eyes of love through the love of Christ, to get to know them, to make friends. And then as you provide opportunity to share Christ, give that to us as a desire and a burden and a goal. And help us to show the love of Christ, sharing the gospel to others. Let's contemplate. Let's think through those truths. Folks, if you're convicted and you'd like to come forward and you'd like to talk, that's fine. You can talk with me in the back or some of the leadership, or you can talk with God right there in your seat. Ask him to help you to have more compassion, that other people around you would become very dear to you as they were to Paul. As Leslie plays,